Chilling Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelley.
August 4, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know it? Because you're hearing me say this. Anyway, Thursday, second to last broadcast day of the week for the O'Shelley Effect, but a lot of other things going on the network. If you're on the live stream, I started late, about 10 minutes late. So not much could be done about that. First of all, Jack ran a little over, and then had a little technical issue and a little personal issue. So all those things resolved in 10 minutes. Happy, though, to have Mike Swanson from WallStreetWindow.com. Of course, he's the guy behind that. Also the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War. Two very interesting books. Why the Vietnam War is the first in a series of three that is planned. And The War State, well, that's just been one of those go-to books. You got to read it. You should have it on your shelf, etc. Anyways, we'll get into that, maybe some more. But first, how you doing tonight, Mike?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I guess this week I got YouTube on my mind because I'm putting more content out and trying to do a lot more on there. And also China and this whole situation with Taiwan. I don't know what, I mean, if you want to talk about one of those two or you got something else on your mind.
Well, no problem. You know what? We can talk about YouTube. We can talk about China. We can talk about the price of dog food. I'm here, okay? So there's a lot of things relevant in the world, and let's get at it. You know, when it comes to China, it's really interesting to me, and I'm going to start there, because I've got a lot of listeners that are constantly complaining effectively that, well, you know, Joe Biden is just in the pocket of China. That's it. I even got a co-host on Friday nights who says he wants to call him Chairman Joe. Okay. He's going to just acquiesce to them. He's giving in to them. He's doing... Okay. That is one part of the narrative. But there's really weird stuff going on here, it seems like to me. Where do you want to begin? With the business angle? You want to begin with the political strife? You want to begin with the... I don't know if it's saber-rattling. I'm not sure what's happening here. When it comes to U.S. interactions with China, there you go. There's an admission. Do I have a complete handle on it? Not necessarily. I did see some interesting stuff in the past 48 hours that made me reconsider a few things. Where would you like to begin on the Chinese situation?
Well... where we ended up now, it's pretty remarkable what's happening, quite honestly. But I don't think the Chinese is very happy with the Biden administration. So if he was in their pocket, he's fallen out of it. Really, I don't, truth be told, you know, I know Trump talked about China quite a bit. He campaigned in the first election in 2016. You know, as he started talking about China then, and of course 2020, China virus began to really almost scapegoat him, and of course you got the tariffs. But if you go before him, Obama's the one that started the so-called China pivot. He was saying that, okay, we're going to stop focusing so much on the wars in the Middle East. They're going to run their course, and you know we don't need to do all this massive defense programs and you know build stuff for that anymore. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on China, and so Obama started it, and then you know the in the Pentagon National Security State they started to basically, I think you know begin to. Make that into the reason to build all these new weapons programs. And we talked last year about this big submarine program that the U.S. is going to start. They're going to replace those nuclear submarines that shoot the missiles that you saw in you know, the old some of these submarine movies. And they're also making a new attack fleet. And they're going to sell some of these boats to Australia. So that's a escalation or the creation of a naval arms race that wasn't there before, and that was what Biden started. Now, this situation is, I don't really think we know the truth about the causes of it. We can see some of the results, but this situation being Nancy Pelosi going to Taiwan and making statements that I don't think any American officials have ever made while being in that country, of her high of position in the U.S. government, you know, basically hinting that we would go to war to defend Taiwan against China. Now, the official policy since Nixon's been president, and before that really, is that the United States does not actually support complete Taiwan independence from China. And that one day, you know, it could become part of China as long as it's not done through war. So in a way, Pelosi is going against that. However, the Biden administration distanced itself from her trip. You know, before she left, they said, oh, we're not telling her to go. And the military, the Pentagon, says she, it's probably not a good time to go. So they were distancing herself from it. And, but then they also said, we can't stop her, which all that seems very bizarre to me. Doesn't really make sense that she's going to go over there and do all and make all these statements. And just being there triggers this incident, crisis. And it's much more serious than the U.S. media is portraying. So as she was going, they were playing over the weekend a couple Chinese peoples that aren't even high up in their government, but like spokespeople and for media outlets being real belligerent about her trip. In making it, you know, and then she's like being tough by even going over there. But the thing is that what they have done now after she has left is pretty remarkable. They are doing these maneuvers, the Chinese Navy, around Taiwan, but these maneuvers are so intense that they're in effect a blockade of almost the entire island. There's only like two little narrow passages that boats can now come in and out. And I think they're sending a message that, you know, in the future, if something else happens, we're just going to blockade the whole country.
Well, look, Mike, here's the problem, okay, as far as I'm concerned with the entire issue of China when we start talking about exactly what is the meaning of this and that and the third thing regarding, okay, Pelosi's troop, what is the status diplomatically, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see anything coherent here in, I don't know, again, let's go back to the course of our lifetime, right? You have Nixon opening up China, right? The relationship and all that. There, let's begin the history there. There is no coherent strategy for dealing with this, and you got to break it into a bunch of different parts. From a business world standpoint, okay? From an economic standpoint, there is a seemingly an isolated thought process that goes on here when it comes to American dealings with China, right? We've had the issues of intellectual property. We've had the issue of, you know, all the bootleg stuff that used to come out of there. The fact is that many corporations in America benefited from the slave labor effectively in China, right? We have the rise of a, what should we call it? I guess a blended sort of economic landscape there. Where, yes, it's a communist country and this and that, but it doesn't function like a completely communist regime when it comes to business, right? In recent years, we've had, well, China, we have to go, you know, Trump's whole thing to begin with was they're ripping us off. They let, you know, the guys who were here before me Let them rip us off. So it there. That's one thing. Then there's the military aspect, where clearly, you know, we're outnumbered as far as troops go, you know, and this kind of thing. And the competition back and forth without the Soviet Union as part of the landscape when it comes to the competition for the superpowers and the various militaries on the planet, it's that's a separate issue, seemingly, from business, because you wouldn't generally treat people in the way that we have when it comes to China if they were a significant military threat. Or at least that's the way America hasn't done business before, right? You back up your business moves where you're taking advantage of a situation with the great military. It doesn't matter if we're talking about the sugar and fruit companies in South America or if we're talking about, well, all of Asia, right? This is a confusing thing. Now, I don't see how Biden was in their pocket to begin with exactly, except that he would be a guy benefiting off of international deals and things like this. I get that whole line of thought. But is there a coherent presentation from the American powers that be when it comes to dealing with an adversarial nation on the corporate level, on the military level, on the political level? It's all very incoherent in my mind. None of it makes sense. Nobody is working in concert with the people they should be, and they normally would be, when it comes to any other superpower, any other significant threat, any other real competitor. China's a special situation. And you and I also had to spend time breaking down these people that think that they are the greatest existential threat to the Western world. And, you know, the China hawks, remember those, right? That also got involved, you know, in the Trump administration, and certainly have come and gone as far as the, you know, the presentation from the right-wing think tank / you know, media conglomerates out there. These things keep shifting back and forth, whether China is the priority, whether they are the greatest threat, whether they are the people we should be doing business with. It seems to me as though no one has a coherent strategy regarding any of this. How crazy do I sound, Mike?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the events of the past 72 hours prove it. Here's the thing. Yesterday, and speaking of August the 3rd, I know people listen to, you know, this days, weeks after we do it. But yesterday on August the 3rd, while Pelosi was over there, now today's the 4th, and this blockade basically is going on. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to end Sunday. But the message has been sent, I think, that they can do this again and make it even bigger if they decide one day. But yesterday, there are two... There's an editorial in the Washington Post by the editorial board that said that this trip that Pelosi took was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And it blamed her for the trip. And what it said, it claimed that, and this is where I'm skeptical, I don't know, you know, I'm just not willing to 100% believe this because it seems so fantastic to me, but it claimed that she decided to go over there because she's, you know, the Speaker of the House, and most likely the Republicans are going to win in the fall, and she won't be Speaker anymore. So she wanted to do something big to show that she's a friend of Taiwan and really believes in freedom and being like they're not using this word, but kind of like a superhero, you know, for fighting for these people. But the reason why they said it was a mistake is that they didn't consult where they were, the Australians, the Japanese, the people in the Philippines, and the Koreans, the Vietnamese, all these countries that are all wary of China, You throw India in there too. All these countries wary of China, that really, I don't want to say they're an alliance against China, but you know that they're more allied with us than them.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. None of them were told of this trip, and some of them are angry about it. You know, this is all happening on the diplomatic level. And then there is an article in the New York Times saying what I just said about these countries being not told and angry, going into much more detail about that. I mean, this was written like a news article, not an editorial. Mm-hmm. So if they can't, you know, if you're going to gin up or create a confrontation, a crisis her trip has done, you would think that they would be talking with allies about doing it. Let's plan ahead the next step. No. So if they can't do that, then who knows, if, you know, it's probably not planned out here either. If the Biden administration had nothing to do with it, her going over there, that's just as bad as her going over there without them telling her to, you know, with mm-hmm. them telling her to do it.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just a big, giant mess. And it would suggest no one's in charge, no one has a plan. Does anyone even know what in the world they're even doing?
Well, this keeps happening because, again, with Trump and his tariffs, right? Most of the economic advisors that seem to know something about Asian economics were saying this is going to be counterproductive. They did it anyway. And this keeps happening. There's these constant, you know, reports of confrontation. Well, there was a confrontation in the South China Sea, right? These different naval encounters. All this stuff going on. It seems like nobody wants to communicate with anybody else regarding, again, a coherent strategy of any kind. And this is the latest example of one small group decides to make a move. It's weird because China is one of these nations that, indeed, there's never a coherent response. I mean, you don't even have, like, say, two competing factions here. It's every time something happens, it seems to be isolated. It's never a whole of, here's a crazy phrase, whole of government approach. It's never, let's tell the business people what it is they need to be doing. It's never, let's protect our business interests. It's never one thing. It's never one direction. It's always, I have no other great word for it besides incoherent. That's just the way it is. I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think that's a good word to describe it. It is incoherent. It's not, there's no real logic apparent that you can say this is going to work out, or this is a strategy that's going to lead to something right. That's a victory. You know, it's like, but if you step back, mm-hmm. I mean, the tone of those articles I just mentioned was that this is actually a strategic loss or tactical loss for the United States, that China at the moment, you know, it's on, you know, the U.S. is the loser. We've angered the allies
mm-hmm.
and, at the moment, at least, China has demonstrated a lot of power that it never has demonstrated before in, you know, when it comes to Taiwan, when it comes to using its Navy. You know, there's no sign at all that the Taiwan, you know, they're in a blockade. They're not, there's no, I very seriously doubt they're going to try to get out of it, the Taiwan, or fight it or something. The blockade's going to end on Sunday. But my goodness, the thing though, if we, I mean, maybe a way, I mean, it can be a trap to think like this, but you know, that Oliver Stone movie, JFK, the Mr. X character that talks to Kevin Costner, you know, he says, who benefits from the Kennedy assassination? And that's how you're supposed to figure out who did it. It's sort of, can be a trap to think like that. But if we do ask that question, who benefits? No one does, seemingly, you know, no country in the world's benefiting. I don't know if China is really benefiting either. Even if they're on top at the moment, it may make these people, you know, other countries get angry at them and take steps. It's just who benefits from global tensions? I mean, or war or conflicts? You know, the only people that are really benefiting from this are the defense contractors. That's it. The defense industry is benefiting. But, I mean, they didn't need this. You know, they're going to get their Navy programs or Air Force programs. They just passed the defense budget. But then again, if tensions were to go away, you know, and maybe you have to occasionally have tensions to keep people scared and in dangerous situations.
Yeah, ultimately, I think this is the answer to what it is that I asked a couple of years ago, frankly, when, you know, it seemed serious that we might get out of Afghanistan and various other things might be de-escalated. When it came to the war on terror, I said, you know, there's going to need to be a cash cow for the people that benefit from this. And that's not just, you know, your direct military hardware makers, but the people that benefit off of the rebuilding, the people that benefit off of the potential for conflict, the people that benefit from, again, the business arrangements that get made where slave labor is not acceptable but somehow goes on and benefits, you know, various international companies that that do well because of it. And this kind of conflict must be perceived in order to justify a whole lot of things like this, right? So we don't have a successful war on terror anymore. We need another boogeyman. Now, some people say they're trying to sell Russia as the boogeyman. Not so much, in my mind. It's not going to be successful. I think we've gotten over that a bit. A lot of people say, no, they're trying to push it now. That's why they want you to sympathize with Ukraine. You know what? Way out of line on that. I am sick of that discussion about, oh, poor Russia. No, it's not the same threat. It's not the same thing. They're not being demonized, okay? I'm not, no. But it is beneficial for various industries, including the various things attached to the military-industrial complex, to have an off-the-shelf boogeyman, to have a potential conflict, to have a greater threat, to have the existential destruction be a possibility. And it seems like maybe they're going to finally market this incoherent interaction with China as the great threat that we need to prepare for, you know, whether we're building nuclear subs or we need to deal with the technological aspect of it where everything is vulnerable because, you know, the security problems, even going to TikTok, right, where they were like, oh, TikTok is going to be a threat to national security because it's a Chinese company. All of these things might be folded together into the new narrative, which is that China is the greater threat. Now, whether that's real or not, I mean, I leave it to judge, you know, I leave the listener to judge for themselves as to how real the threat is. But to my mind, this is the only purpose, is to create the new great threat that can motivate. We need to be prepared. We need to be ready. We're going to have to rebuild the military. We need to catch up. We need to excel technologically. We need to make sure our business practices, you know, continue to overshadow the competitor. Whatever it is, across the board, maybe that's the only actual reason for these very odd sort of, again, disconnected, constant little projects that have no commonality between them. They're sending Pelosi over there. What good does that do? Can that establish anything for the future when I don't know anybody who's predicting that she's going to hold on to her job as the Speaker of the House, okay? What are we talking about here? Why is she even going? Good question, actually, Mike, right? I mean, why is that happening? Why do we still have these tariffs in place? Is that actually working? Is that benefiting? Is that changing the equation? Okay. Is any of this stuff, this fake diplomacy, this direct diplomacy, this ability to reevaluate the, you know, and all of that, again, with the other threat, let's not forget, because you're allowed to say that, it, you know, the coronavirus, the COVID-19, could have originated, come from a lab in China maybe now. You're allowed to say that now, Mike. maybe this is the all-encompassing existential threat that is going to be necessary to justify all of what's going to come. The next military budgets, the greater intelligence budgets, the need for rebuilding and, you know, the Build Back Better. We're going to have to catch up technologically. We're going to have to, you know, ramp things up because we're not competing with the Soviet Union anymore. But China in and of itself is the greater empire. They're the ones. And maybe we have to prevent the next Soviet Union from being formed. And it's not the boogeyman Putin who's going to do it. It's China. What do you think of that?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the thing about Russia and Putin, you know, when that war started, for immediately, I mean, that became the big news cycle. And it was being used, I think, by the Biden administration to try to explain or blame the cause of inflation solely on that for a period of time. And, when you have, I mean, it doesn't matter who the president is. Whenever there is a crisis overseas, it's going to be used to try to increase the poll numbers of that president, mm-hmm. or be used for all sorts of purposes. But that all kind of died down, I believe. The Russia story in the United States.
Weird question for you. Why is it that they're not using the circumstances with China to justify some of the inflation? Because the tariffs are going to be passed on to the customer, right? So Chinese products must have gone up. This interaction, this problematic situation, why isn't this part of the justification for the, you know, again, the still crippling inflation, even though some people are very happy the gas price is coming down and et cetera, et cetera. How come that hasn't been offered as a major part of the equation, like, you know, Ukraine with your gas price? I mean, seriously.
Well, I think the Biden and Trump and the Republicans, they don't want the tariffs to go down, so they don't want you to think the tariffs are have any detrimental effects.
Out of sight, out of mind. Yeah, okay.
So,
okay, I got
which
you.
Of course they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, tariffs always do, you know, on they increase the cost of imports. That's mm-hmm. what they're designed to do. Mm-hmm. And there's people that benefit from that and people who don't. Consumers don't. But if you're in an industry that can't compete anymore, then the tariffs help a lot. The steel industry, for example, those tariffs weren't just put on China. They're put on European countries. Tariffs were put on Canada when Trump was president.
Right.
So they're kind of a desperate economic policy, you know, used to defend select industries that typically donate a lot of money to the politicians who create the tariffs. That's really how tariffs work.
Right. No, and that's the thing. And again, yeah, they're all collected by the, you know, it's like, oh, that's going to, I've always found that amazing, where it's like it's not going to affect things because it's not really going to, it's going to change the prices. And once it changes the prices of the imports, it usually changes the price of the domestic product as well. You know, there is always an effect that resonates off of these things. But I just find it interesting that the added tariffs, not just in China, good point there too, but everywhere, are not being brought up as, hey, you know what? If you wanted to get cheaper products and you wanted to literally immediately reduce the price of things, taking these tariffs away and doing it in with a certain procedural construct in mind, you could instantaneously drop the prices on many things very quickly. But, oh, wait a minute, that would be getting away from building back our industry, right? And building back our products that are supposed to be able to compete. Mike Swanson is with me. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going into an interesting direction here with China. Who knows? Maybe we'll get to YouTube in the next half hour, but maybe not. Or maybe that's part of the discussion. Stick around. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into The Ocelli Effect.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver,
the stock market, Wall Street Window.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Ocelli.com.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
For the next half of the first hour, because we're going to the 30-minute template here on the Ocelli Effect and going to try and take our breaks to 30 minutes, we're going to continue to talk to Mike Swanson and maybe change subjects a bit. We talked a lot, for a whole hour, in fact, last week, about confronting the latest incarnation of YouTube and how it is maybe somebody could exist on there, you know, outside of the kids making toy videos. And I guess gamers, I mean, but they're on other platforms too. Anyway, if you want to put serious information on YouTube, is that even something that's viable anymore? Are you going to just get struck down like I do a lot? Are you going to exist on there? What's going on with it? And Mike last week was talking about maybe exploring new options on there, and what that might do to not only the information, but hey, the way it's being presented. So, Mike, where should we start or pick up again on the YouTube discussion?
Well, since we spoke, I mean, I'm trying to do. It seems to be some of it's working. There's a dark side to it. I want to talk with you about though, too. That I really, by doing this, I really can see it. But basically I'm trying to get more views, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the way I'm doing it is I'm posting 2 or 3 videos a day when I used to do like 1 a week. Mm-hmm. And they're like anywhere from 3 minutes to around 15. Now, I interviewed someone today for 30 minutes about the stock market, but I've been putting up, actually trying to do like 2 short videos, 3 to 5 minutes a day, and then the stock market video. Mm. And now I bought a course about YouTube and 2 weeks ago and watched other people talk about it. Yeah. And I think a lot of people think, oh, and YouTube kind of wants to encourage you to do this, to try to keep people watching a video for as long as you can. Mm-hmm. But I don't really want to do that with every single video. I'm trying to get it so people see a video that's short and think, oh, this is good, I want to watch the next one, and try to build an audience like that. But right. The thing, it so far it's working. I mean, I'm not expecting to become some giant YouTube person, but one part of it, though, yesterday I was looking at this course the guy had, and this guy's got millions of subscribers. Mm-hmm. His name's Meet Kevin, and I never heard of him until 2020, and then after the shutdowns, he became one of the big, or perhaps the biggest stock market person. Mm-hmm. On there for about a year and a half. So that's how I heard of him.
Right.
But he was cheerleading the stock market, talking about meme stocks and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, I've been doing videos on YouTube since 2006. Right. I mean, before it was even bought by Google. And it changed a lot from those days.
Oh, which, yeah. I was just going to say,
it's just,
I mean,
something different.
I've been on there since, I think, 2008. Whoops. I don't know where that's coming from, but something is playing on my computer over here. Sorry. But the strangeness is I went on there in 2008, I think. And at a certain point, I was trying to build an audience on there, and they had it, you know, fairly easy to monetize and all this, even when Google first took it over. You know, it was worth the time and effort to do it. Lately, I mean, I've sort of just given up. I'm happy that I can post my shows there sometimes. You know, and the other shows I produce. But that's it. I sort of gave up on it. I mean, this week I put up another puppy video. Just so you know, I'm putting up like a weekly puppy video on the YouTube channel. No fancy graphics, no presentation, just here's the puppies this week. I know that's probably really ridiculous and a waste of time to people, but I don't know. I just figured let's see what happens when I do that for 2 to 5 minutes. Hasn't done anything interesting yet. But look, there's something to it. Your presence on Google is important whether you want it to be or not. Okay? And it's changed over time. Now, this guy that you had encountered and you're checking out, yeah, okay, Meet Kevin. Sounds funny because it's like, you know, is it Meet Kevin, M-E-A-T, or is it Meet, M-E-E-T, Kevin? Okay, he's got his thing, and maybe he does have the successful formula. But I wonder, Mike, if in 6 months or a year, his formula, despite its great success, it might be perfect for everybody to try. Maybe it doesn't work in 6 months.
Well, I'm not really... I'm not really doing exactly what he's doing. I just got a few ideas from it. I'm not trying to duplicate what he's doing. I found a tool where you can see, there's a website called socialblade.com, and you can type in a YouTube channel, and it'll give you the numbers mm-hmm. of how their views are doing. And this guy's views have gone down now probably half what it was at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And this is the danger of his strategy in YouTube in general, mm-hmm. If you're trying to make money from it. Now, the real reason I'm trying to do this right now is I want to reinvent my website, and right. That's the plan, that's a step I want to take. And I read a book, a business book by somebody who also is big on YouTube, Valuetainment's his channel, and I've watched a lot of his videos. In fact, he's done a couple Kennedy assassination videos, mm-hmm. and interviewing a couple of the people that were at Parkland. But anyway, he's got a mass following too, mm-hmm. and I mean, he does primarily interviews, videos where he's interviewing people or talking about business stuff. But his real business is he's got some sort of insurance company.
Okay.
Of all these insurance agents working for him. And I bought his business, one of his business books, and in it he said that the reason he did his YouTube channel wasn't to make money off YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy's channel is so big, he's got people working for him, you know, help producing these videos now.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason he did it was he was growing his insurance company, and when it started out, he did something, I'm not sure what, but he did something that it made another company sue him and take him to court, and he had to settle.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that experience, he was advised as a business strategy that he needs to get on YouTube and social media and build a platform for himself in order to control the messaging, like make propaganda so that if he's attacked by a competitor or whoever, that this presence will help him ward off any attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that, and I thought, well, that's really interesting. And I, even though I'm, you know, been on YouTube one way or another for years, I thought, well, if I really want to reinvent my website and try to do more in the news world, then that's probably a strategy I should do too. So that's one reason I'm trying to do this. It's not so much I don't really expect to make hardly anything on here.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is the strategy that the Meet Kevin guy promotes, I think can work for a short amount of time, but as you are wary of, it easily will blow back on you. So, mm-hmm. and I can see it from the videos I'm doing why people end up doing this. So I'm looking very closely at the statistics mm-hmm. of my videos recently, and first of all, I knew I had some sort of problem with my videos, and that's kind of a secondary reason I bought this darn course is when I do stock market videos, I've always gotten high click rates, which they're, you're told that's great. That's what you know YouTube wants. That's what the YouTube has videos they put out saying this. And I get a good amount of time that people, I thought, watched the videos.
Right.
But YouTube wasn't promoting them to new people. It's just like I got an audience that has seen my videos before, and they like them, but they're not showing it to new people. So I bought the course to try to figure out how to get new people, and that's why I'm doing more videos a day. But what he says in this course is that if you want to be big on YouTube, you've got to cheerlead something really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, you have to cheerlead Donald Trump or cheerlead being against him, as an example.
Okay.
And, you know, we've seen over, you know, that's the most obvious example everyone's seen over the past couple of years, the rise of various YouTube personalities, some of them banned, some of them still on there,
right,
that I never heard of until Trump was president. And then they glammed onto that.
Tons of them became successful based on that.
Yes.
They were highly monetized, all kinds of things.
Making fortunes.
Yeah.
Well, the guy with that cap, you know, that became so big.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Everyone knows who I'm talking about. But anyway, this Meet Kevin guy did that with the stock market,
right,
cheerleading the stock market. And when I look at my video statistics, I did a video just the other day where I start out. So if you look at the stock market niche on YouTube,
mm-hmm,
if you just type in stocks or stock market, what you'll see are, well, I'll just do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to type in stock market and read you the headlines. Hashtag stock market and long-term investors can still find opportunities. That's the second video that comes up. Stock market responds to unemployment claims by rising. Will go up more. That's the top video.
Mm-hmm.
Third video, the case for a bear market bounce despite inflation. That's the third video. The fourth video, this market rally feels stronger and sustainable. That's the fifth video. Jim Cramer is now the next one. Jim Cramer gives his take on different things.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, real excited. What should investors do? Anyway, Fed Reserve creates a new ball game for stocks. Here's a video of Kathy Wood. We're in a bull market, new bull market. So here's the thing about it. The stock market's down this year.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are losing a lot of money, even though it has rallied over the past 5-6 weeks, about 10% off the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still a bear market, and people need to be very cautious. However, all the videos that YouTube is pushing the hardest say quite the opposite. And I did a video yesterday. And I said, I just did a new trade, and it's a trade where I shorted it's not important, but I shorted the treasury bonds.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, but in the video, I said that, and then I said, I'm not taking a big risk here. I'm not betting a lot of money. I'm just doing a very small trade,
mm-hmm,
and I don't think anyone should do big trades. It's very risky market.
Okay.
This is not a fun market right here. And then I said, look, we've had a bear market since January. And, you know, even though it's rallying, doesn't mean the bear market's over. Well, what happened was when I put that video up, YouTube, the click rate was really high.
Right.
And YouTube, I'm looking at the stats, you know, YouTube sent a lot of impressions of the video for the first hour. And then the impressions collapsed.
Right.
And then I looked at the statistics, and they will show you when people stop watching the video and turn it off and go to another one. And when I made those statements that this is a small trade, a bunch of the viewers immediately went off the video.
That's when they left, yeah.
They left. And then when I said it's still a bear market, you know, a bunch of more left. So the video, because of those two signals, YouTube degraded it in the result. Well, if my goal is to make money off YouTube or build a giant audience by doing financial videos, well, they've just told me not to say those sort of things. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Meet Kevin guy says in his course, that if you really want to get big, you got to cater to what the algorithm wants, which is what the mass audience wants. It just serves them. Mm-hmm. So that's what he's done. And now, you know, I'm not trying to say he's going to disappear. He's making a lot of money still. And he can change and talk about other things. Right. But, you know, that's not the game I want to play myself, because it sounds like it's a fad, either get you in trouble or something, just a bad situation at some point.
Right. Okay. So what we're looking at here is that you have to cater to people that are looking for positive reinforcement and only, you know, and it did that. That's what it is. You have to positively reinforce that. The people that are going and tuning onto YouTube apparently want to hear all good news about the market's thriving. Of course, there's ways to make money in the market when it's not thriving, but they're not looking for something like that. They just want to hear, put more, pour your money in, right?
Yeah, I mean, how to get rich.
How to get rich. That's, well, what can you blame?
Same thing.
Yeah. You know, here's the get rich quick. It reminds me of the Honeymooners, you know?
Like this, five stocks that could double, another headline, you know, have five stocks that can double. That's what the headline is. How much money can you make from stock market investing? That's another video. There's another video. I made $100,000 in 15 hours.
Well, you know what? People are going to tune into that, though.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so, okay, I get it, but...
But I think that same thing holds for any other topic. If you want to talk about the politics, you need to, you know, you don't... If your goal is to get 1 million subscribers, you need to cater to, you know, like you said, cheerlead one audience.
That's what it has to be. I mean, we'll get away from the Trump thing for a second. Let's just say, theoretically, although I doubt it, there was an audience that really wants to hear about how great a president Joe Biden is. That's what you got to do. Not talk about any of the negativity. Not talk about the current circumstance. Just look at what he's accomplished. He's doing so well. And if you do that, and that's what the audience wants, then there you go. They're only going to click on things that are in. See, but how is that determined in the first place? You know what I mean? Like, is that being determined in real time by the audience and how they're reacting and clicking on this? Because if that's the case, I don't know. It doesn't sound so bad, does it?
What do you mean? How's what being determined?
Well, if it's only based on, okay, look, just like anything else in media, you have to give an audience what they want. So if that's all it is, okay, but something else is in play here, isn't it?
I think that's how it works. They're just giving them what people want. I'm not sure what else is in play.
Well, I don't know, because, again, it seems to me like, okay, but see, there's more to this landscape than this, though, than just, okay, go with the trend. Well, no kidding. Everybody wants to go with the trend if they're creating a piece of media, right? So, I don't know. Is there more to it? That's the big question.
I'm not sure. I mean, I mean, I think it's not that much different than television. You know, they just, you know, they get the most ratings by giving people what they want.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing, is that I noted when I went trying to find certain things, I couldn't find. You know, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. That's all it comes down to, is that they've come up with a good way to know what it is the audience wants, theoretically. I mean, it's hard to tell, because is it the algorithm that is being formed by the audience, or is the algorithm forming the audience?
Well, that's, okay, Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think you're correct that both is happening, and I'll use the financial media as an example. And I think this is a disturbing aspect of the whole thing. Is it's sort of self-reinforcing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the stock market, in the stock market, I believe there's been a massive dumbing down of people in it over just the past couple of years because of this whole aspect. So when I got into trading and investing, people were buying books about how to pick out stocks, how to analyze the market, how to read balance sheets, all these sort of things, you know, magazines. And look, I was advertising on the internet and have been, you know, off and on for years. And 2002, when I advertised on Google AdWords, it was just a banner ad appear on different financial websites. And the phrase was learn technical analysis. And people would click it. And that's how I was getting, building my business. That simple, one simple ad. And the thing is, that ad won't work now. I can't run an ad that says learn stock market or learn stock trading.
Well, let me throw it in. Let me throw it at you this way.
It won't
work. Mike.
It won't function. The people don't want to learn. They want the hype. They want, I mean, there's always been hype.
Of course they do.
They want to be told they can make $1 million tomorrow or $100,000 in 15 hours.
Well, let me throw it at you this way.
Let me tell you this. This is a better way to explain it. I saw a video about a guy did about being a gambling addict in Las Vegas, and I think I might have said this on your show before, but he was addicted to slot machines, and he said when he goes in the casino, he saw the pictures of the winners of 50,000, 100,000, a million. They put photographs of people holding these checks, and he says in the video, I just thought I'd go in there and keep playing until I won. Well, him seeing the images of the winners, I mean, it's totally unrealistic in fantasy, but him seeing those images made him think he could do that.
Of course.
And that's what I think has happened when it comes to the stock market.
Right.
That people see the videos of people making all this money and talking all this stuff, whether it's true or not, they're talking all this stuff. So the audience, you know, someone is, you know, they didn't grow up when I did. You know, someone that's 30 years old, this is their first experience of hearing about the stock market. This is what they see. And this is so they believe that this is all normal and the way it really is when it's all fantasy.
Yeah.
And that's how I think the hype, the algorithm is programming the audience to get even crazier about their investing and trading, and put that same sort of programming into politics or whatever. And I think something similar is going on.
Well, here's a way to look at it, Mike. A lot of people go to YouTube for how-to videos, right? So, and they go there for all kinds of stuff. Okay, I don't know how to do this. Let me see if there's a video on YouTube that shows me how. I've heard that from real people all the time, right? And I've even gone, you know, is there a video on YouTube that shows me how to do this, maybe? This is one of the main reasons why I think a lot of people do actually intentionally go there and search for stuff, okay? So, at the end of the day, because of the greater accessibility with the Robin Hoods and all this kind of nonsense, right? People want a how-to video, and what their how-to video, the only ones that they're going to want to go to are the ones that show me how to get rich quick, right?
Yeah.
So, you want your how-to video on the stock market? Well, obviously, they're going to just tune to, well, how do I get rich quick? I mean, that makes perfect sense, right? I mean, isn't that kind of actually is a good piece of logic here? That's all it comes down to. The how-to video on how to take the shortcut and get it done. I mean, that's what anybody looks for if they say, well, gee, I wonder if they could show me on YouTube how to reset this computer, you know? Or is there a trick on, you know, you hold down the button this long and you do that or whatever on a machine? Yeah. Well, maybe you don't have the instruction book or you don't want to read the stuff online. You go to the YouTube video. here's my how-to, the shortcut. Is that basically what we're seeing here?
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you this, because, you know, there's so many internet platforms out there.
Right.
And Facebook, I mean, where I, you know, I look at Facebook, and it's become is a main source of news for people, especially local news. And I can see that the local newspaper I have, it's just diminishing and diminishing. And
right.
It's how, you know, they own the chain that owns the paper here. They own a half a dozen papers in Virginia, and they're all diminishing. And I think I believe it's very likely one day it's going to go. They're just going to be gone. And but the thing is that Facebook said last week, or Metaverse, whatever they call themselves now, that they're going to do away with the Facebook feed as it is now and make it more like TikTok. And I don't use TikTok. And they says Instagram is like this too, and I don't use Instagram. But they're saying that they're going to make it so you're going to see less of the people you know, and it's going to be more things picked out by their algorithm.
Right.
And what's that going to do? Like,
well, if
do you
ever
use TikTok, do you know what this would be like?
I know somebody who does, and it's just, you know, they randomly alert you to things that are vaguely connected to stuff that you seem to already spend your time looking at. So that's all it is. It's just a constant reinforcement of what it is you previously demonstrated a desire to watch. And they're very short videos. So that's all it is. When it comes to the how-to videos, it was brought up in the chat room, actually, that how-to videos are not a good way to build a sustainable audience. That's true, but here's the exception with this, with what Mike's talking about here with investment. There will be a constant change of circumstances with these how-to videos. So if you need to know what the new thing is, and it changes week to week, you could definitely build a sustainable audience that way. That only makes sense, right? Now, again, like the other examples I brought up, okay, how do you reset a computer or whatever? Well, you probably don't need to do that every day or every couple of days.
Right, sure.
But you might need to know new market conditions that somebody else is going to boil down for you. So I don't know what that means exactly, except if they keep giving you the how-to get-rich-quick scheme, and it is the how-to video on how to do it, and you got to keep doing different things to work up to it, and it's a process. I don't know. Maybe you can build a series out of it and a sustainable audience. Those are my thoughts. What can I tell you? But we're actually out of time, Mike. You know, and I do tell people, go ahead, go over to WallStreetWindow.com, be in the know. Check out what's over there. Check out Mike's YouTube channel. If you want to see occasional puppy videos, I'm putting mine up, by the way. We have a channel as well. And I don't know. I don't know how to make that thing operate well. I just don't. I have been stagnated at a certain level of subscribers, and viewership is down, and it just is what it is. I don't know what to do with it, but maybe Mike is going to discover the new stuff that needs to be done. So anyway, in the next hour, I'm going to take your calls, or I think I'm going to try and do that right here on the show. I don't know. I'm going to see what I'm going to... I'm going to sort this out during the break. Anyway, Mike, thanks so much for doing this with me, man. I appreciate it. You'll be here next week, right?
No, I'm actually going out of town next week, but I'll be here the week after.
No Mike Swanson next week, but the following week. So we'll rejoin this, maybe, this discussion or another one in progress. Who knows? Maybe we'll have to break down the next international existential threat as well.
I hope nothing else happens. Goodness.
Look, I'm just hoping for, I don't know, a better world. Silly, silly me. Mike Swanson, WallStreetWindow.com, the author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Good talking to you.